Good morning. It's, I guess we're in the afternoon already. It's been a great day here in Georgia, and it's great to be online here at BPN Radio with our Storm Watch. This is Dale Allison. We're looking at the end of the week here. It's another great Friday, and we're hopeful for everybody that they've had a great week. We've had, and we want to pick up where we left off last week. We were talking a little bit about the church bylaws and some aspects of the bylaws that may not have been in the original ones when you and your church got organized. And as we mentioned last week, it is something you can look at in terms of amending and getting everything up to date, so to speak. I'd like to think the bylaws would be in good shape for everything that's done, but very frankly, there's been so many changes, especially in the last 10 years, that a lot of things that appeared to be somewhat cutting edge in the bylaws that were made in during that period of time or updated at that time still puts you in a position of being not fresh and not up to date because of the changes that have been made. Let's at least glance at some of those changes. We finished up last week talking about pastoral succession. That was one of the things that a lot of bylaws did not cover. And so we want to look at some other things that have become necessary over the years. We have a committee that is called the Executive Leadership Compensation Committee. It can be called any name that you want. The essence of it is this is a group of people whose job it is to provide a compensation for any and all members who are on the leadership committee and of the church, whether that committee is a board of directors, whether it's a board of elders who make the financial decisions for the church. If in most instances that's going to include the pastor, maybe an associate, maybe someone else who is drawing compensation from the church, but they can't be voting on their own compensation package. Several years ago, the Internal Revenue Service adopted a procedure by which, quote, reasonable compensation, end quote, could be determined. The language used in most organizational documents that get sent to the IRS for approval as a 501c3 organization included specific language that the IRS authorized, the essence of which was that there could be no personal inurement, no gain by anybody working for a not-for-profit organization other than reasonable compensation. And reasonable compensation for years after that was like beauty. It's in the eye of the beholder. There were several ministers and ministries that felt like they had a reasonable compensation, and the IRS challenged that, and determination was made that it was not reasonable. In fact, it was unreasonable. And as unreasonable compensation, it caused some problems for several individuals. Some jail time, some heavy fines, loss of 501c3 standings for the ministries. And so in an effort to try to bring everybody to the same page as what was reasonable compensation, they proposed legislation, which was passed and signed, that essentially said that if you had a group of independent people, that means they were not employees of the church, they were not family members of the folks whose salary was going to be evaluated, and you took into consideration a number of issues. How long the pastor had been pastor, his educational level, the size of the church, the size of the income that came through the church and its associated ministries. And then you did some comparisons. You looked for other churches of similar size in similar geographic locations. And from those, you came up with a range that was then presented to the compensation committee, and they made the decision. And they said, this is the what we feel is reasonable compensation based on those figures. One of the things that did, it generated a number of organizations who started producing comparison materials to let people know, based on geographic areas, size of the church, education, all that kind of stuff, what would be reporting the compensation of pastors, associate pastors, music leaders, the whole gamut of people being employed in the church, as well as secretaries and treasurers and other individuals who would be church administrators and such. And that material was available for purchase, so that if you had your committee was preparing for that, they didn't have to be doing it blind. They didn't have to try to contact other churches in the area to see what they were paying their pastor. They could receive this information from these various organizations and then apply their own standards, record the information that they had, kept that, so that if they were ever called on, that they would have the information and corresponding data to present the compensation. A lot of people misunderstood. They thought that would just had to do with salary. But in reality, compensation was everything that the individual was going to receive from the church. You take, for example, a pastor. A pastor gets a salary. He may get a housing allowance. He may have some health benefits that he gets. He may get a car furnished by the church. He may have a retirement program that's built in. And anyway, whether that material is taxable or non-taxable is not for that committee to decide. They take all the numbers, the values, they crunch them together, and that comes up with total compensation. So that was misunderstood by some of the early groups that put those things together and thought that their pastor was doing pretty good, only to find out that when you added up all the other additional material that and compensation that he got, it was his compensation, not the salary, that was the main ingredient in this thing. And so that created a whole change. And I found out that not every church in the country is abiding by that law. Now, what does that really mean? Well, from an IRS standpoint, it means that there could be some problems. If the pastor got audited, they looked at his information, they looked at his church, and here's the thing. If you complied with what the IRS had structured, then they accepted that as a valid determination of reasonable compensation. But if you didn't, then they looked at it as unreasonable. So the burden fell back on the church to prove that what the pastor had in compensation was reasonable. The IRS, once they've made that determination that it's unreasonable, and if there's no further appeals or anything by the church, both the church and the pastor get penalized, if you will. For example, the IRS will say, this is reasonable compensation, X dollars. And so the pastor was getting Y dollars. So the difference between X and Y, the pastor had to return to the church. He had to give that back. Plus interest. Whatever the interest rate was during that period of time, he had to pay back the difference with interest to the church. Then he was hit with a 25% penalty. So not only has he had to pay the money back with interest, but now however much that money was, he pays a fine to the IRS of 25%. So let's just, for some numbers here, let's say that they determined that he had a 25% greater compensation than he should have had, $20,000. So he pays that back plus interest. And then 25% of that $20,000 is $5,000. So he pays a $5,000 fine to the IRS. Now, the church will have a fine. Plus, each of the members of the board or committee, whoever it was who designated that compensation, each of them will pay a 10% fine, which means each of those members would owe $2,000 to the government. as a fine. So as you can see, it's a pretty stiff arrangement. It does not cost that much to put yourself in a position where you can establish this committee and have the numbers worked out so that you do have backup material and all. Certainly a lot less costly than it would be by ignoring that and say, hey, we'll set our own salary and see what it should be. But that's something that is on the books. It's something that the IRS could impose almost at any time. And I've experienced at least one ministry that was hit with that. And they didn't have any kind of committee like that for compensation. They had basically relied upon the CPA that did their 990 tax return to tell them what was a reasonable salary. And the CPA did not do any evaluating. He just was involved with several ministries, and he just, you know, said, hey, 1 year size, you know, you can probably get $150,000 worth of compensation. And that was it. No backup material at all. And he just was, you know, passing on information to them. And that's what they did. They didn't do any full surveys. So the minister was caught in that situation, and an audit was made. It opened up some other problems with the ministry as well. Turned out that the CPA that was representing the ministry had misinterpreted some aspects of the law and had allowed certain things to go through which shouldn't have gone through, and that actually upped the compensation of the minister. It was a sad situation. The minister got hit pretty hard. He had a board, but the board got off the hook because I think they'd hit the ministry so hard and the minister so hard that they looked and said, well, you guys relied on a CPA, thinking that was right. So the board didn't get penalized. They could have. They didn't. Minister did. The ministry did. And the ministry is no longer in existence because they took the 501c3 away from it. So it does happen. Does it happen often? I don't know. With regard to the ones that I've worked with off and on over the years, this is the only one that I have known that got hit and lost that. So it is important that compensation be reasonable. That could be costly. So it's just something that, again, was not part of the bylaws as they were initially created. And I'm sure it's something that you might want to think about adding to your amendments. Another thing about bylaws, is, which seems to be, for me, very controversial, and that is voting. Excuse me. The denominational church has had voting for years. I grew up in a denominational church. We had voting on a lot of issues, including the pastor, whether we were going to keep the pastor or ask him to leave. You know, Ben Franklin once said that fish and visitors grow stale in 3 days. I think some denominational churches think that pastors grow stale anywhere from 3 to 5 years. And they start looking for someone new. And they, not every denominational church operates the same. Some, you are allowed to select your own pastor. And so if you don't want your current pastor, you can tell him when the contract is up on whatever date it is. He probably needs to be looking for another job. And you can go out and start recruiting a new pastor from other churches. Other denominations, you tell a local presbyter or district superintendent or bishop or whatever that individual is called that oversees the area in which your church is located, that you feel like it's time for you to get a new pastor. And if he concurs with that, then he will select a pastor to take your current pastor's place. When I got married, again, before I was working here in this church consulting business, my wife was of a different denomination, and when we made a move from one location to another, we went to her denomination. And over the years in there, I eventually became part of a committee that was responsible for any problems the people had with the minister. We were the group that sat down with him and spoke with him about these problems. We were also the group that we understood was supposed to select a new pastor. And we were getting near that time that our denomination had a big conference, and it was during that conference time that people were shifted from church to church. And I was chairman of that committee and got a call from our district superintendent who said, I need to come down and meet with your group. And I, because I'm planning on transferring your pastor to a larger denomination, because that pastor has recently passed, and I need to have somebody with that experience. So we complied, and he came down and met with our committee and came in and explained why he was going to move our pastor, who was well-beloved in our church, to another location, which was a positive move for him. It was a larger church, meant more salary and that. And if you're working for the denomination, that's an honor to be able to be moved up to another location of larger church prominence. So when he finished explaining why he was doing it, then he said, and I've selected your next pastor. And we said, whoa, hold a minute. I thought that was our job. And he said, well, it's your job to either approve or disapprove of this election. I said, okay, so how long do we have to do that? And he said, well, before I leave today. Well, we don't get to go and to where he's at now and hear him preach or to talk to their people. No, nope. And he said, basically, here's the story. I have selected this gentleman because he is the best candidate for this church. Now, if you turn him down, I will have to send to you the next best. I'm giving you the best. Anything after that goes down each time to someone who's there for backup, but who is not really thought by me as being ideal for this church. So needless to say, our ideas were blown away. We were given a resume without a photo, and we decided that we might as well trust him because if the next guy down is not as good a selection as this guy was, we were hurting ourselves. So we agreed to take his selection. So not every church gets to vote, and we'll come back in just a minute. Just want to let you know that you're here on listening to Stormwatch with Dale Allison on bpnradio.com. This is an opportunity for us to let you know what you're listening to and where. Just as a reminder, you all pretty much know, but just as a reminder. And also to let you know that BPN Radio costs money to be on. And although you get it free of charge and are not required to pay anything, this is a service that's being provided to you, and hopefully with the prayer time, the other shows that are on here, this has become something that you have begun to rely on every day in your life for prayer and comfort, for guidance. If that's the case, then it would be nice to you to join in a partnership to help BPN Radio stay on the air. So I'd ask that you go to bpnradio.com. Once you get there, look for the donate button. Find it, click on it. Either make yourself a regular sustainer type member that's going to commit to a certain amount of money each month. Or if not, make a one-time donation, and hopefully in the future you may get moved on again to do it. But it's a service that's being provided, and we all need to share the load of that, and because BPN Radio is doing a great service to Christianity at large here in the United States and to our country as a whole. So pray about it. See what God would say about you providing some support. Back to our conversation about elections. Independent churches many times do not have elections. And people are saying, well, that's not right. We should be able to elect our pastor. We should be able to elect our Sunday school superintendent. And that's fine. My position is, everybody's got the right to be wrong. And if we look to the Bible as our guide on what to do, we'll find out that God was never big on elections. In fact, a review of the Old Testament in particular would show that there were very few times that the people voted, but when they did, they died. Wouldn't take much for me reading the Bible to understand that under those circumstances, I'm beginning to look and see, hey, you know, voting could be dangerous to your health. Well, where did they vote and where did they die? Well, first of all, let's talk about spies. We know the story about the spies. Not too long after they left Egypt, I think in about the first 16 to 18 months, they actually showed up at the Jordan River, right across from the Promised Land. And at that point in time, God told Moses to choose out 12 spies, one representing each of the 12 tribes of Israel, and to send those individuals across the river into the Promised Land, let them walk around, let them see what's going on, see the cities, see the agricultural crops, and come back and report to the people what they wanted to do. When they came back, as you remember the story, 10 of those individuals reported that, yes, they had grapes as big as watermelons, and in fact, it took two men to carry a clump of grapes back across the river to show the positive agricultural things that were going on over there. Yes, it was true that it was a land of milk and honey. Everything God had said was true, but there's some big boys over there. I mean, big boys. They're giants, and they made us in our own minds to appear to be grasshoppers. And therefore, we're not strong enough to conquer the land. The remaining two spies was Joshua and Caleb. And they were very quick to say, "This is a piece of cake. We can go over there. We can take these people. There's no problem at all. And we can be in our promised land and enjoying the benefits of being there." Well, the people heard the reports and they accepted the minority report. Started whining about going back to Egypt and eating leeks, and it just became extremely difficult. No one wanted to proceed. No one wanted to cross over except for Joshua and Caleb and Moses. And so because of that, God said, "Fine. Then you all go for a hike, and I'm going to wait till all the people who are fearful died." So everybody 20 years old and older that was part of that voting group, except for Moses, Joshua, and Caleb, they all died. And when the next time came to go into the promised land, it was a different attitude. So there was their first vote, and they blew that. As they're continuing in this repeating round and around trip for the remaining of 40 years, there was a challenge. A challenge by what I used to call the three stooges of the Old Testament, Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. And they decided they no longer wanted to hear what Moses and Aaron had to say, and why does God just talk to them, and we're just as good as them, if not better. And so they decided to challenge the authority of Moses and Aaron. So Moses told them to show up with their censers, and all of those who felt that way, and God would make a choice. So all the people who voted for and with Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, they all showed up in this mob, and Moses spoke to him again to give him a chance to back off. And they basically said, no, we're voting for us. And at that time, the earth opened up, and all of those folks went down in the pit alive. They all died. So every time the people had a chance to vote, they died. Well, why do you think the people shouldn't vote? Well, because first of all, you have to be in tune with God if you're going to vote. Obviously, they were not in tune with God. Thought they were, but they weren't. So what you have is you have folks here that were looking for their own decisions. They were voting against God. We don't want to be voting against God. How can we do that? If we're not sensitive enough to know what God's position is, and by the way, sometimes God's position is not what we would think his position would be. You know, there's people we wouldn't give the time of day to in terms of them being right for the kingdom of God, and yet God gives them an opportunity. I mean, how many people, if it came down to right before or even right after Paul's trip to Damascus, where he comes in blind and has to seek a healing touch from a Christian there in Damascus, after that happened, how many Christians do you think would have voted for Paul for membership? I would say nobody. How can we trust this guy? He's just saying he now got a conversion. He's been wiping out other groups, been killing Christians. He was there as part of the crowd that put Stephen to death. What in the world is going on here? But those people didn't know what God had in mind. God had chosen Paul, and he was ready to use him right away. There was no trial period. He was going to use him right away. But he sent him off to the Wilderness Bible School and allowed him to learn a lot more than he knew at that time. And then to bring him back in 3 years, and he was the Paul that we have known and who went forward and spread the word throughout the known world. But if it had been voted, we would have probably voted against God, because we wouldn't have thought Paul worth the effort. So we have to remember, why do you want to vote against God? Why do you want to be on the opposite side of God? Well, what about the vote they had in the New Testament? Okay, let's talk about that. The first thing that happened was that as part of the upper room, they talked and said, you know what? We lost Judas, and we really need to have a full complement of the apostles here. So they discussed it and decided that they needed to select somebody who had been with them for a long time, who knew the ministry and had been loyal to the ministry. So on their own, they didn't have a preliminary or anything. They just looked to see who met that category, who satisfied that. Well, it was satisfied by two individuals. And they said, well, how are we going to choose between those two? And they said they would choose by lots. Now, back then, what they did in the way of choose by lots was they took a jug, and they would take two different colored stones, and they'd put in the jug, and they would allocate one color to one individual and another color to another individual. Then they would shake it up. They would pray while they were doing that. And they believed that while they were praying and asking God for guidance, that when they threw the stones out, the first stone to come out was the one that God had selected. And in this case, the first stone that came out was the color assigned to Matthias. And so Matthias was chosen to fill that position. It was not a vote. They didn't vote amongst themselves. What they did was they cast lots. Well, what about choosing deacons? Okay, we'll do that one too. That again was not a vote. The apostles, realizing that they needed to secure some deacons to help because they just couldn't take care of all the materials that needed to be handled within the church, they told the congregation, the people there, they said, choose out from among you men who met this criteria. And they had four different things that they had to meet. Now, again, that was not a vote. It said, you choose out. You've been around long enough to see these men in action. And here's what we want. We want people who meet these four criteria. So you would look as a member of the congregation, you would look out there and you would see, we want somebody who's honest. We want somebody who's this, that, the other thing. And you would say, okay, that's this guy and that's this guy and that's this guy. And it was one of those times where they all selected the same five or six guys. There was no ballot. They were not voting. They were using what they knew in their spirit. Because when they looked out, oh, I'm sorry, I can't choose that guy because he's only got three of those four things. Here's another guy, he's only got two. That guy, nope, there's a guy that's got those four. Here's another guy, he's got those four. Here's another guy. No, he's only got three. And so they picked out the men who had those four qualities that the apostles had told them to judge on, and they chose them. So it was not really a vote as much as it was a recognition by the congregation that these men fit the criteria that the apostles were looking for to serve as deacons. So I understand people say, well, you know, yeah, you've got to be able to vote for something. Well, people vote every day in the church, whether it's allowed or not. Well, how can you say that? Because people come and people go. If they don't vote by raising their hands, they vote with their feet. And they get up and leave and say, I'll never be back to that church. Somewhere along the line, if they don't listen, if they don't ask God where they want, where they should go, then they will tend to move based on non-scriptural movements. What do you mean? They'll get offended. I've always thought Christians were some of the oddest shaped people, because you could always find out that they had gotten their nose bent out of shape or their toes stepped on by the pastor. And that was sufficient to move them out. They didn't like that the pastor preached a sermon that reflected on something they were doing, and they felt like he was singling them out to the congregation. No, that was the Holy Spirit exposing the sin in your life, and you've done a poor job in response to it. I don't like he's always talking about money. How many people have left church because they're always talking about money? And yet, most of the time, the pastor's talking about tithing. And if you understand the concept of tithing, he's doing that for your benefit. You may think he just wants more money for his salary, or he wants more money to build something at the church. And the truth is, if you're tithing and doing what you're supposed to do, that's for your benefit. You get a benefit off of the tithe. You're the one who can come in and find yourself doing good works with your funds, and you being blessed for spending their tithe. What does Malachi say? Bring your tithes into the storehouse. And he'll open up the windows of heaven so much so that you cannot contain the blessing. He's talking to you. But there's some people that they don't want to hear about the tithe because they're not tithers. They don't believe that the New Testament tells them that they have to tithe, and so therefore they don't want to hear about it. It is true that that the conversation in the New Testament deals more about you hearing the Lord as to what he would have you to give, and that the Lord loves a cheerful giver. But even then, you can't. When people are talking about tithe, they're talking about something that's to your benefit. It's like having TV, people come on and tell you how eating dessert is not healthy. If you're a dessert eater, like I am, That gets old after a while. You know, you don't have to be told by this skinny person that you need to give up desserts. If that skinny person happens to be the pastor and he's constantly telling you every week you need to give up desserts, yep, you might walk away and leave him high and dry. Because that's what people do. But if God told you to go there, then you can't leave till God tells you to leave. Well, God told me to leave. Isn't that surprising? That, my friend, is shocking. Because Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and forever. So if he's telling you to go to the XYZ church, why would he all of a sudden say, that's enough, you can go to the ABC church? You think Jesus changed his mind? I think some folks need to sit back and reflect on why they're leaving. Well, God told me to leave. Really? Really? Is that the burning bush in front of the house that you started to leave and said, hey, this is the last day in church for you, pal? Don't you think you'd want to know, God, why? Or is it really you? But obviously, God knew there was a lot of people going to come and go, and that's why they put hinges on a door. I was in a church one time, an independent church, and it got so bad that I mentioned to the pastor that we might have been better off if we just had put a revolving door in there. But the biggest problem was that the pastor was hitting pretty hard about things in people's lives, working very much toward each of us getting things straightened out in our lives. And again, for what purpose? For our best interest. Pastor wasn't gaining anything out of us being better people. I think it's something that human beings just... I remember a story. It's not a story. It's a true happening, but I'm passing it on as a story to you. When I first started working for churches, I was much younger than I am now, and was asked to come out and do an audit, what was called a compliance audit, with a church in Texas. The pastor was probably in his late 50s, early 60s. And I went there, and he had some things in the morning, and so I met with his secretary and went through a lot of the church books and stuff, had a chance to look at, and then he and I were going to have a chance for lunch and to talk with him. And so we went there, and as we were speaking, he asked how everything was, and I told him that it was fine, but I thought we had to change his compensation package so that he paid less taxes, because he was entitled to a housing allowance but wasn't taking it. Then I asked him how he had liked ministry, and he said, you know, Dale, if it wasn't for people, this would be the greatest job in the world. And that stuck with me for these 30-plus years, and I'm sure almost any profession can say the same thing. But You know what? People can change, and we're going to pray that they do. Father, for those who are struggling with their church identity and are wondering what's best for them, we ask, Lord, that they, as they pray for you, that to you, that you provide them with direction so that they may be able to understand why you have brought them where you brought them, why you have allowed them to be a part of that church, so that they may understand that you're doing everything that there is for their benefit, that you're blessing them, and that they need to be right where you have them, because you become a better person for it. Amen. Folks, looks like I've run a little overtime here. So again, you're at BPN Radio. You're listening to Storm Watch with Dale Allison. Have a great weekend. God bless.